The Senate Committee on Veterans Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Madam Vice Chair.
As you know, it's Valentine's Day, and I was reading, how can I correlate Valentine's with veterans, because many of our veterans are overseas. But as I was Googling information, I found out there is a county in Tennessee, it's the Democratic Party of the county, who holds an annual ceremony, it's called Valentine's for Veterans, and they offer a breakfast and music and a speaker. So I thought that was very special, because I think we should be remembering our veterans on Valentine's Day. And so I found a little poem. And so I'm just going to share with you the little poem. V, and it's taking the letters of Valentine's Day. V is for veterans. And you can say it's very special veterans, vital veterans, vibrant veterans, valiant veterans, okay? A is for all of the U.S. brave veterans. We can call them amazing, always remembered, appreciated veterans. L is for living in freedom, love, loyal, liberty. E is for veterans' heroic efforts that are excellent and encouraging. N is for never to be forgotten. T is for teaching youth. I is for student organizations and individuals sending Valentine tributes, because I did find that many schools make Valentines and send them to veterans overseas. N is for the numerous ways we appreciate you. E is for thanks for everything. And S is for your valiant sacrifices. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. And I just would note for the record that in some clandestine operation within the military, we all ended up with sweethearts on our desk here. And I'm going to task Senator Manning to track that down for us to find out who was doing this clandestine thing.
Hot on it, sir.
Hot on it like that. Colleagues, I normally don't talk about the topic I'm going to talk about right now. You heard us beforehand, and for those who didn't know the recorder was on, we were talking that this is the 10th day of the 10th week of the 10th month of the short session, which means really in the second week, but it feels like 10 months out. And so last night, because it was pre-Valentine's Day and a few other reasons, my wife and I left the building early last night, which means 8 o'clock, and went home. And what normally happens when we go home is when we hit the house, household six, and Senator Manning knows what that means, takes charge, and she starts opening the mail, and I cook dinner. And so the net result of that was actually rather surprising last night. Hopefully I'll get through this. On Friday is the anniversary of my son's death. And last night, I know many of you out here and colleagues, I talk a lot about the Portland Veterans Administration, so on and so forth. Last night, I had at least a dozen or more letters from the Veterans Administration in Portland addressed to Peggy and I. And it actually brings about the fact that, which was, I guess, not surprising, how much hope, how much graciousness, and how much caring is really out there. There's a dozen or more letters in my hand that are from the Veterans Administration telling us that individuals around the state of Oregon, and they have their names and, of course, no other information, donated donations to the Veterans Foundation in Portland to help treat veterans in Portland in honor of my son. And, I mean, it's total, complete surprise.
Wow.
So, thank you. Colleagues, with that, the schedule for today, because this is our last meeting before the first deadline suspensions are out there, we are going to have two public hearings, one on 1518 first, and we have a good representative here, and then we're going to have a second public hearing on 1517, and then we're going to come back to the two of those and do work sessions. So everybody in the audience knows what we're sort of working off of in 1517, which will be the second public hearing. We're discussing only the base amendment, or excuse me, only the base bill, the original bill that's there. And then in the second set of hearings and work sessions, which is 1518, and I've got to make sure I'm going to get this right, we will be discussing, looking for my notes, the A11.
Primarily,
and then we're also going to be discussing the Dash 9 amendment that is here, so we can work between ourselves in joint ways and means. For those of you on the record who know out there, or on the don't know, 1518 has a referral to joint ways and means. It's not ready for prime time in this committee, and I have committed to a group of people, some in the room, that we're going to get it right down in ways and means. But I want to give opportunity for everybody to have public input first, and so we're going to open a public hearing on SB 1518. And if the good co-chair of student success would come up.
She would.
Thank you, Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Mona Sanderson, and colleagues in the Senate. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. I come to you today with an amendment to Senate Bill 1518, the Dash 9, that I believe you have before you, that the Senator and I have talked about, and I will kind of loop back to that. But I just wanted to give you a brief presentation of why it is before you. I have been working on oil train safety primarily with the goal of establishing a consistent West Coast approach to oil train safety for the last couple of sessions. Came very close in the 2017 session, did indeed introduce another bill about that, House Bill 4004, on the House side with your House Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee. It has been a long ongoing process of negotiation between various interests, railroads, the various state agencies who are involved, with our overall goal being to establish what are called contingency plans, which is a railroad submits saying, here are plans for responding to any accident or emergency with oil trains. Here's where all of our equipment is. Here's what personnel we have contracted. Here are all of our plans. This is something that is submitted both in California and Washington, and we are trying to establish, a consistency for Oregon as well. We also, these plans also include the development of more of something called geographic response plans. So the contingency plan is what the railroad says, here's our equipment supplies plans for response to any incident. A geographic response plan is something you have before that as well, and it is done historically by the Department of Environmental Quality. They've done it on a lot of water routes and pipeline routes of oil transportation. The idea is, along those routes where the oil trains go, what are specific areas in the geographic response that would need to be known about in that response planning, whether it is spawning grounds, whether it is where endangered species are, whatever it is, but specific information about the unique geography along those routes so that can be integrated into the response planning. So, as I said, we do have a bill on this, 4004 on the House side. What we do not have is a funding mechanism. That has been a big part of the frustration of moving this forward, is not wanting to impose more work on a combination of agencies, Department of Environmental Quality, who has the oversight for the planning. Also, the Office of the Fire Marshal has been involved, some emergency management, the Oregon Department of Transportation. So, because we continue to not have a funding mechanism determined for that, I do not see a path forward in this short session for that. In the meantime, however, I think it's important that, and many folks believe this, that one of the kind of base level things that we can do to increase preparedness for this is to require the railroads who are transporting this oil by rail to prove their financial responsibility for cleaning up a spill or an incident in case it happens. Now, we all know Mosier, June of 2016, we have had such an incident. You guys have done a little work on this. You know that we got awfully lucky that day. It was far from a worst case spill. We had a confluence of decent weather and time of day and other issues that did not make it a worst case. But there have been other incidents in other parts of the country and in other countries where we have had more worst case spills, and railroad companies indeed did not have the financial wherewithal to cover that response and cleanup. So the Dash 9 is a fairly simple proposal falling under the relating to clause of emergency preparedness about requiring the railroads to prove that they do have the financial wherewithal, whether it's insurance, any number of things. We are specifically not terribly specific in this. What we did is the drafter from LC and I looked at the language from some Washington statutes about how Washington requires this. Again, this is something that both Washington and California require. There are different, you may hear other comments about this, there are differences about, well, worst case spill, what are we talking? Capacity, this percentage of capacity times that many dollars. Not wanting to get bogged down in that, I specifically used this fairly general language, put it through the fire marshal office for this part because of the statute that we talked about doing it, which is from some language we did before where the fire marshal already coordinates plans for emergency response to an oil by rail incident. And so the thought is, let's also have them be, while we are figuring out the contingency plans, let's have the fire marshal continue to be who receives this. We can do some work in rulemaking between all the interested parties about specific numbers and percentages. What to me is critical is to get this established so that we can continue to make progress on this issue and have this moving forward. Senator Boquist and I have discussed the idea of having this be part of the conversation. I understand there may be some concerns about how this fits in with other statute. I would still argue vociferously for passing this anyway and including it so that it is that much stronger in that moving this to the Ways and Means Committee and having it go forward. I accept being on the record and taking the good word of the good senator of the need to include this in the resolution of Senate Bill 1518 in the Ways and Means Committee, and I would still ask your passage of the Dash 9 so that it indeed has that more official imprimatur as this bill moves to the Ways and Means Committee. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
You've got your Valentine's garb on. Yeah, it was really
and
cool.
If I may point out, my State of Oregon seal scarf. So it's Valentine's Day and the state birthday.
Thank you
for giving me the opportunity to say that on the record.
Yeah, you get five happy faces. I was just, I think it's a good amendment myself. But I was looking at transporting crude. Whether or not we should limit it to crude when there are other toxics that can be delivered by rail in the same manner,
yeah.
Whether or not that's a consideration or...
Mr. Chair, Senator Manning, that has been part of the conversation. We've kind of gone back and forth on this. Again, it was a specific decision because of where, because of the statute under which we talked about putting this that deals with oil by rail specifically. We have had some conversations, and I know in our conversations with the railroads about establishing this as a all hazardous waste, that just brings in, that just brings in a whole host of other issues and considerations because there are other regulations for the transport of hazardous materials. Other hazardous materials have other sets of requirements around them. and oil wasn't isn't necessarily part of that. So that's why we want to pull this out and have it by itself. And I believe that as we continue to have this conversation, those other hazardous waste will, or excuse me, hazardous items will continue to be part of that conversation. And in the short term, just wanting to get this established.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Thank you. I know this is a touchy situation and a touchy conversation. Could you tell me how many oil train accidents we've had in our state in the last 20 years?
Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, just that one. And as I said, we were pretty darn lucky. And despite that fact, here's the thing that I have said and I will continue to say publicly and proudly. Rail is an extremely safe way to transport things. It is an extremely safe way. And I have testified to that multiple times. And that one time can make all the difference. And so the more coordination we can do, just the idea of having the same set of requirements for planning with Washington, California, and Oregon is significant. It is not, you know, it's not a terribly taxing thing we're trying to get to. It really is consistency in that, because indeed rail transport is an extremely safe way to transport, but boy, that exception is a doozy. When it happens, it's really significant, and the more we can do, you know, Cascadia events have we had in the last 50 years? None, but we are still doing a lot of work to try to plan for them because we're pretty sure it's going to happen.
A follow up, please. Has the new program for the new rail cars kicked into effect yet, and are we seeing the new rail cars coming online?
Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, slowly but surely. You know, one of the things that has been part of this conversation as well is the ever-present, the feds are going to come up with requirements for contingency planning. And it just keeps not happening. It's a slow, slow process. The rail cars themselves are being slowly phased in. Yes, one of the with the upgraded rail tank car safety standards, there's Oregon companies who are ready to retrofit. Who we are very excited because they can Greenbrier can retrofit these cars and make them much safer. It's just a slow process because it's like with anything. You know, we get some of the worst ones off the tracks. But it's a slow thing. It's not a, okay, they all have to be off the tracks by this year. It's a slow rollout process. So it is happening. It's just not happening as quickly as we would like.
One more follow-up, if you don't mind.
Please.
Is the concern mostly with the Bolton crude, or is it with any crude?
Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, overall.
Okay.
All of it.
Just a couple things to work, because I do want to follow up on the good co-chair's comments. She and I have discussed this, and I'm in agreement with her in the concept of we need to have the fiscal responsibility, and I'm actually in agreement, you know, and this should not be a shock to me, with her request, and I'm also in agreement this session. We've had discussions this morning, council and I, and her with council and others, on the integration. We think this actually exists. We're doing on-the-job training here, colleagues. We inherited this. Actually, I'll remind you, we were given this opportunity last session, and one of our members said he didn't want to pursue it because they were pursuing it on the House. And so now we've been given another opportunity to learn on-the-job training here as we kind of go along. And what the chair has been trying to do is integrate what we're already doing, get ready to do the next thing. And if you'll even go on the dash 11s on page 3, we have included actually items that says we shall do training exercises, so on and so forth. We're already doing those things now. What we're doing is codifying this so that, I guess, please don't throw things at me, but my parable is so people can't backslide on things that we're already doing, and then develop a plan. Yeah, see, I told you that. Right. So we then develop a plan, and I'm going to, at a later point, bring up the director of OEM, who feels like he just got hit upside the head, and explain to him how he got hit upside his head. And so I am committed with Representative Smith-Warner to make sure we get this integrated down in ways and means in a manner in which it facilitates where our reporting is now, ensures that we have the financial capability, and we integrate it into the right places. At this point, I don't know what I don't know. And my commitment to the representative is to make sure that we do this downstairs, even if we have to have our committee do it. I will also point out, at a later point, it will be pointed out that there are technical errors in the Dash 11s, and the clock is ticking, and so therefore we have to sort of fix those. And I am also, to the good director of OEM who's going to come up, taking some of my marching orders from people above my pay grade. So I'm kind of in a deal here. But I am committed to what the representative has said here to go forward. I've actually told her, you know, it's not my intention to move the A9, but it's an intention to move her intent into the main bill downstairs. So we are at a disagreement, and I get to make the decisions here, and she gets to make them her decisions there. And of course, unless you have the prime opportunity in the democracy here to go forward. But I greatly appreciate your input. I greatly appreciate the representative's passion. And I will just point out here, this ought to be interesting because there is a fiscal on the Dash 11s, as there is a fiscal in Bill 4004. So I think that the Speaker and the President are going to come to some conclusion. I don't know what that is. It's, again, above my pay grade. So.
And if I may, Chair Wilkerson, there's indeed. No fiscal in the Dash 9.
Good representative, we have discussed that. Yes. Okay, thank you very much, Representative.
Thank
appreciate
you
coming forward. I do want to call the OEM director forward because he is, I support a surprise to find that he is the referee. He has signed up to testify. And colleagues, I'll point out in the 1518-11s, in discussion with the presiding officer's office, they were looking for someone, for a better word, I guess, in layman terms, that could referee, knowing full well there'd be a fiscal on this, referee the various elements of the railroad issue, the emergency planning issue, and they wanted a fresh face that could referee. We had a lively discussion about that. About the director has many other things he's already doing, and to the director's steel, I sort of lost. Okay, so and I am fully aware that there's a fiscal on your department being the referee. So I will let you jump in and tell you, oh well.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Phelps, and I am the director of the Oregon Office of Emergency Management. One correction, Chair, to your comments. I am the state's emergency manager, therefore I am never surprised. reviewing the amendments to this bill, Chair Boquist, members of the committee, want to point out that the Office of Emergency Management does, in fact, excel at facilitating dialogue among diverse stakeholders. We do it all the time, from our ORS Council partner construct to the response to real-world emergencies and disasters. For example, when we coordinated with the Office of the State Fire Marshal to move dozens of fire engines and hundreds of firefighters from Oregon to California during their devastating fires over the last 6 months. This is what we do. In fact, we've intentionally built our emergency support function system, or ESF structure, to leverage the collective knowledge, skills, abilities, and expertise of our state agency partners. However, one of the keys to facilitating these conversations and this meaningful dialogue that improves our state's culture of preparedness is the recognition that we, in fact, are not the subject matter experts in every sector or functional area in emergency management enterprise. But we do have, probably more importantly, the phone numbers of those people that are. If passed, and in consideration of the fiscal impact statement provided by the Oregon Military Department, which you astutely anticipated, OEM will rely heavily on these SMEs to achieve the outcomes articulated in this legislation. To that end, I would respectfully request via amendment, as this bill moves through the committee process, the inclusion of those subject matter expert agencies to include the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, Oregon State Fire Marshal's Office, and the Oregon Department of Transportation to this legislation to facilitate and codify that partnership. These are the agencies that have the responsibility for the transportation and hazardous materials emergency support functions under the state's emergency operations plan. We would also seek clarification as to whether or not Section 13 in the Dash 11 amendment inadvertently references OEM, as we are not the primary agency mentioned in Section 1, the subject of the Section 13 in that amendment. I think that's probably been discussed. This concludes my brief prepared remarks, and happy to answer any questions.
Council, any clarification?
Oh, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the rulemaking reference to OEM in Section 13 is deliberate, and of course OSFM, the Fire Marshal's Office, is referred to, excuse me, express rulemaking authority on page, in Section 2, which is on page, Section 6, excuse me, on page 2 is the rulemaking for the State Fire Marshal's Office, and it is deliberate that OEM is named in Section 13 to make sure that both of those agencies are covered.
Okay. Thank you.
And as I pointed out, it is a work in progress, and it's on-the-job training, and I would encourage you, Mr. Director, since you're likely to inherit one of the two versions, either the version that Senator Representative Smith-Warner pointed out or this particular version, that you delve into it and come up with, because I know there's at least two other technical errors, that were some shalls, but there should be some mays, and there should be how to proceed language that's not technically, you know, in agreement. It supposedly means the same thing, but because this is going to be a work in progress down in Joint Ways and Means, and, you know, rather than send it to rules to inherit it again, the decision was meant to say enjoy Senate to Joint Ways and Means. Madam Vice Chair, questions?
Mr. Chair, is this something that we have to do in the short session? I mean, is it an emergency that we do this? I don't think we've had an adequate public hearing on it.
Madam Vice Chair, what we're really doing in here is asking the Office of Emergency Management to sort of do what you just said. There's been this bill and this issue has been around multiple sessions. And what OEM is being asked to do is, instead of us trying to make a decision in the Dash 11s, is in their portion, is to get everybody in the same room and come up with a recommendation to us and come back in the next session. That's what we're asking OEM to do.
And they need money to do that.
And I'm assuming that they need money. The president's office is assuming they're money. And having a plan that is concise going forward versus, I guess, 404, is that right, in the House?
That's for 4,004.
I mean, 4,004, which says go do it when we don't have a plan, is what we're trying to do. And the direction from the president's office is, since we've been at this, since we've had a Vulcan fuel accident in which actually those of us who went found out we responded well, all of the agencies said we responded well, and we're really looking at preventive issues here, is that we need someone, and as we also found out, I'll point out, previously, if you just turn to page 3 of the Dash 11's colleagues, this committee previously heard that we weren't doing certain things, and we actually found out that everything on page 3, when we got all of the members and the agencies out on site at Mosher, in which some of you were there, we found out we were doing a lot of the things we were told we weren't doing. And so that's why we've codified that. And so, as I pointed out, we don't know. The intent of this portion of the Dash 11 is to ask, other than us creating another work group and us doing it all, is to get the subject matter expert on getting emergency people together, that's OEM, not the expert on the deal, getting all the people in the same room, and then coming back with, okay, here's the plan, here's what the federal, and even the example, as Representative Smith-Warner started to point out, is we're finding out, okay, maybe we already have these financial reports, but they're over here, and the fire marshal doesn't have, it's consolidate all this information together and come back to us with a plan in the next session, versus, Madam Vice Chair, waiting to the next session and then say, now go get the plan.
Yeah.
That's sort of the problem we're doing.
It's difficult for me to follow up. This just makes sense, and for these agencies to be doing this anyway, and that's what it's so frustrating on learning more and more about the bureaucratic process that we have. Everyone working in silos. So no, I see the overall importance of this. I'm just surprised that all of a sudden at the last minute someone comes up with the idea and wants to draft amendment real quick and stuff it into a bill. you know, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it.
Well, Madam Vice Chair, the reason we call it common sense is it's not common.
I know.
This committee faces it all the time.
Yeah.
So I would just point that out. Okay, thank you. Director, please, again, we're obviously looking for input. It is, you know, once the committee does something, I will be transmitting an overall letter to the co-chair saying we have these technical issues, some of the issues that we raised, that we need to find the integrate the financial piece that's already there into this. And I we will be offering committee members, so you know, to the Joint Ways and Means, since they are on short cycle, as we start to wind down, that our committee staff will work with them to get this in line with what the Speaker and the President, you know, are willing to do as we go forward.
Thank you for your time.
Sorry. With that, colleagues, I'm going to close a public hearing on 1518 and go back and open a public hearing on 1517 solely for the purpose to see if anyone wants to speak on 1517. And I do that because there's no one signed up, but it is this committee's policy to make sure that we have the maximum opportunity for people to speak on. I do not see anybody rushing down the aisle to speak on SB 1517. So I will then go ahead, because it's on our calendar or on our deal, open a work session on SB 1517. Council, now, if you will please explain to all of us what we think we are doing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1517 was previously scheduled last week, the 7th, and the, this week on the 12th. It has a minimal fiscal impact and a minimal revenue impact. The underlying measure is the allows for the hunting tags for disabled and combat veterans to be shared with an existing program for terminally ill children.
And that is all we're doing. Simple, clean, and no common sense, Madam Vice Chair.
No, okay. Chair Boquist, I move Senate Bill 1517 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Vice Chair, Monis Anderson moves SB 1517 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion, colleagues? Is there any opposition, any objection? If not, so ordered. It was Senator Hansel that brought this to our committee. And so therefore, since I have learned a new technique from the chairwoman of the Health Committee, assign it to somebody outside of your committee, Senator Hansel will be the carrier. So with that, we will close the work session on SB 1518, colleagues. And or
no,
excuse 17. Me, 17. And we're going to open a work session on SB 1518. 1518. All right. Color codes here, right? I'm going colorblind today. 1518.
So I would like to know.
And Council, will you please explain what is in the dash 11 for the record?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash 11 combines content from the underlying measure, which is the cemetery authorities being able to deal with disinterred bodies disinterred from a natural disaster. So that content is in the dash 11. The dash 5 content, which is the quarterly report from the military department that addresses audit deficiencies so that they check in with this committee and the House committee for the next couple of years, every quarterly for the next couple of years. The dash 11 also incorporates the dash 8 amendment, and that amendment requiring the additional training exercises through the State Fire Marshal's office for oil hazardous releases during rail transport, and requires the Office of Emergency Management to meet with the marine and rail operators to integrate them into state catastrophic emergency response plans and to report back to this committee, and requires multiple entities to work together to review and report on oil spill preparedness and response in Washington and California and as per the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. The last thing the dash 11 does is add a representative of the Department of Justice to sit on the Homeland Security Council.
So colleagues, let me recap. We have the original bill, which is the cemetery bill. And in the cemetery bill, there is more work to be done on this one, because as Senator Manning pointed out, is we really haven't figured out who's supposed to pay for this. If there's an error, especially in low-income citizens around the state, in which, you know, a good portion of our citizens are. So we'll have to come back to portions of that. The second portion is as was discussed, and we had the audit from the Secretary of State's office, and again, Senator Manning raised the issue, is where does the buck stop? And the issue here, as we've discussed, and it was in the previous amendment, is to have them come back on a quarterly basis, is that correct, and report back to us so that we can at least use our
influence to make progress, help them make progress on the deficiencies. We've discussed at length the hazardous rail transport report that we want to try and get from OEM under their leadership coming back. And then the last piece is back in 2005, there was not a representative put on the Homeland Security Council because at that point the Fusion Center was under the military department. It has since transitioned out, so therefore to have the Fusion Center integrated into the Homeland Security bill, rather than common sense, we once must have to say, okay, yes, this agency that was once here that we moved out. We probably should have fixed that one when we moved the budgeting aspects of the Fusion Center over to DOJ. That is what we're doing here, because there are fiscal implications and there are technical issues. I mean, our two courses of action would have been move it to rules and fix it in rules and then send it to Joint Ways and Means, or just send it to Joint Ways and Means and then our own committee staff work on it. And in discussions with the presiding officer's office, the choice was made to send it in Joint Ways and Means. So there we are, colleagues.
Questions?
Yes.
I wanted to make sure that the clarification on the record on Senate Bill 1518, the dash 11, the fiscal impact statement is still pending, and we are anticipating a light with a request to refer to Joint Ways and Means, because primarily it is their previous work on the dash 8 where that came up. A fiscal was almost issued on the dash 8. It was a light with the request for referral. Since the dash 8 amendment is being incorporated into the dash 11, that's what we're assuming is going to be in the. But it hasn't issued yet. It hasn't formally got through their review process. The 11, of course, you know, came out last night, and so I'm sure they've been working on it this morning.
So do we need to wait?
We can either wait, Mr. Chair,
usually
or
we
you
shouldn't
could do
wait.
Or we could do a motion to suspend the rules, of course, in the absence of that fiscal. It'll get a further analysis in the Joint Ways and Means Committee. It's at your discretion, the committee's discretion, whether to wait until, give them more time, or go ahead with the motion to suspend.
Before we go to that point, so the dash nines that Senator Representative Smith Warner talked about, that is not going to be considered at all, and I'm wondering why.
The dash nines that she has, we are told, after my discussion with her, and that's why I went back and had a discussion with her after the fact, is that this already exists elsewhere in the law. And we're already doing this. Only we're not doing it and giving it to the fire marshal. And so instead of creating, okay, do it again and give it to the fire marshal, we're trying to track down where it is and either transfer the authority or transfer the copy so we integrate this down in Ways and Means. And I have committed to Representative Smith Warner to make that happen down in Ways and Means. As soon as we can track it down exactly where it is. And if it's not, then do it. And if it is, then make that integration the correct way.
So now to get to the second, why even, since we don't even have a FISRA Zone 11, still pass the original bill but then send it to Ways and Means with a statement stating that the dash 9 and the dash 11s were being considered. I hate doing policy in Ways and Means, and I've been told by the president of the Senate, who is co-chair Ways and Means, that we shouldn't be doing that. So I'm still having an issue with sending an amendment that down there, and you're saying that the president wants it. Is that correct?
That's what I'm saying.
So then it's going to happen anyway. I'm just being quirky today.
It's Valentine's Day.
Madam Vice Chair, the 11 is the closest mechanism to not having them do policy. It incorporates everything, and the only thing we then need to fix is the financial reporting piece when we figure out how to fix that. And we've offered to do that at our committee level and then give them the solution so they don't do the policy down there. If we just send the base bill down, then we're going to entrust them to do all these pieces separately.
Some of us chairs are very, very, we will not send something out without a FISRA.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, I did just hear from the analyst via email, and a light should pop up on their system It's been released. We're just waiting for it to show up so that we can print it out and get you a copy. She confirmed that that's what's been.
Okay.
Right. And but I just want to point out, as you just pointed out, Madam Vice Chair and Chair of the other committee, is that we were told that before we started. So we've been waiting for it to pop up on her screen, even though it was theoretically sent.
I know.
From down the hall into the electric system.
That's
about
right.
40 minutes ago.
Yeah. I being in a short session, I hate dealing with bills that we're doing fast and furious, have no idea if there's going to be some unintended consequences, haven't given the public a chance to really go through it. So, you know, I'm just being a little bit, stating my views. Yeah, okay.
Boy, it'd be a great time to talk to you about another bill, though.
Okay, big look. Bill. All right. Pandora's box has been opened. We're not going to jump up here. So.
Okay, so I do. If we have it, if we have the FISRIS, we don't need to suspend the rules, correct?
That's correct.
So we have it.
But it must be. It has to be. I mean, technically, it has to show up on the system and be available.
And it's not on the system.
And it's not on the system yet.
So we do have to suspend the rules. Yes.
If you recess briefly and wait for it to catch up.
Pick your poison, Madam Vice Chair.
It doesn't matter. What's your poison?
Well, I would if I were you, I would make a motion to suspend the rules. In fact, that we have been told by legislative fiscal that it has been electronically transmitted and we haven't received it, and it is going to be a light. And so therefore we should suspend the rules.
So
pick your poison, Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Boquist, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on Senate Bill 1518
without the fiscal
revenue statement.
Madam Vice Chair moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on SB 1518. And for the record, we have been told by the analysts that it is supposed to be a fiscal light, and it is being transmitted through the process right now. It just has not come up on our computer, so therefore we must suspend the rules technically.
For the record, Mr. Chair, I'm going to give the Vice Chair some sugar so she can.
I purposely didn't give myself any.
Back in balance.
All right, colleagues, is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered, Madam Vice Chair, we're back to you.
Okay. Chair Boquist, I move to adopt the -11 amendments dated February 13th, 2018.
Honorable Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves to adopt the -11 dated February 13th, 2018. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the -11s are adopted. Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Boquist, I move Senate Bill 1518 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
The Honorable Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves SB 1518 as amended to the floor with a due pass, and the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Further discussion? Opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. Colleagues, due to the overwhelming issues we have before us, we won't have a meeting later this week, so you can go to the other committees and have additional extra meetings at your leisure. And with that, colleagues, I think we'll see everybody next week.